Good morning. I'm Amy Wirth, Commission Chair, and I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Legislation Committee for Friday, January 10th, 2014. First of all, I'd like to turn to our staff, confirm we do have a quorum. Thank you very much. Next item of business is our consent calendar. Is there any item that commission members or members of the public would like to remove from the consent?
The vice chair arrives.
Well, there we go. Welcome. We'll do the consent calendar. Let me give you time to catch your breath. Okay. May I please have a motion to adopt the consent calendar?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously. All right. Mr. Liccardo? I'll let you take over with item three, which is fiscal year 2014-15, the governor's budget.
Thank you. And thank you for tolerating my tardiness. Randy, it looks like you're ready to roll on this.
We are. I'm going to have Rebecca go through some detail about the governor's budget, but I just want to introduce it. You have a couple of pieces of paper at your desk of some numbers we just ran. One is a green sheet that was just delivered to you. So that's the state transit assistance funds that come to both the commission and to local transit operators. And just to give you a sense, unlike prior years, the STA program is now pretty much on autopilot. We don't exactly know how much money will be generated because it has to do with the price of fuel. But the estimates now is that the revenue is going to be a little bit lower from last year as compared to last year, excuse me, this year, simply because fuel prices are going down. The salmon colored memo that's before you is a lot more detail about what's in the governor's budget. That's new. And Rebecca is going to go through this. A lot of it has to do with the new cap and trade proposal, which is good news in general. Transportation is getting a good bit of this money. So while we do have some quibbles with how they're expending it, I think the important part is that this is a good problem to have, and we're kind of grateful to have it. So, Rebecca?
Thank you, Randy. Good morning, Vice Chair Liccardo, Commissioners. We do have a lot more detail than we expected to have because the budget was released one day earlier. So we'll walk through this, but do keep in mind that, you know, it's still relatively new information, and we're doing the best we can on relatively short notice. So the good news is that the governor's budget is proposing $1.7 billion above current spending levels for transportation. Some of that is the largest share, rather, is in bond funding, so it's an appropriation request of existing Prop 1B bonds. I'll go into some detail about that. The other source of the increase is a proposed $400 million from cap and trade funds, and then $351 million in early loan repayment. These are old transportation fund loans that were made to the general fund dating all the way back to 2000-2001. And so since they were just transfers from the state highway account and a small portion from the PTA to the general fund, there's some flexibility about how that funding is spent, and I'll talk more about that in detail in a moment. So I think one of the areas of most interest is the cap and trade program. The budget proposes to spend $850 million in cap and trade funding this next fiscal year, and the table on the first page shows you where the governor is proposing to spend that money. Transportation overall is getting 70%, so that's definitely very encouraging and reflects the cap and trade expenditure plan, which has in its draft and final version always highlighted transportation as the priority. One category that isn't included in that $400 million is a $200 million proposal for low-carbon transportation. That's essentially expanding a program at ARB that's focused on zero-emission vehicles, low-emission trucks, buses, and that type of thing. So it's a grant program, and I think they're also proposing a new program to demonstrate some clean freight. But that's not included in our $400 million because it's generally not in the transportation realm as far as which agencies are governing it. $250 million is proposed for high-speed rail. This is a pretty important request right now given the lawsuit and the freezing of the bond funds, and it's proposed, the majority of it is proposed for right-of-way and construction funding for the initial operating segment, and a portion is for environmental. There's also $50 million proposed for rail modernization, and that's for capital improvements to existing rail operators for connectivity. We don't have a lot of detail about which types of operators would be eligible for this as of yet, but we're certainly looking into that. But it's, again, strictly focused on connectivity to the high-speed rail system. And then last but certainly not least, I think one of the things we focused on the most in the last day, and the memo does as well, is this sustainable communities program that's proposed. It's proposed for $100 million out of the $850 million. It's proposed to be administered by the Strategic Growth Council as a grant program. So I'll get into more detail, but it's quite different than what we've been advocating for, which was more of a regionally based formula program coming to MPOs where we would have discretion to choose which projects get funded.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Can you remind me, the Strategic Growth Council, who's that made up of? I mean,
sure. The second page of the memo, there's a footnote that lists all of the agencies. It's the new California State Transportation Agency, Health and Human Services, Cal-EPA, the Natural Resources Agency, the Governor's Office of Planning and Research, and one public member. Sure. So I'd just like to go into a little bit more kind of detail about the cap and trade funding. It's important to note that the $850 million that's proposed in the budget, that is a proposed expenditure level. It's not a forecast of how much will be raised this year. So, you know, one of the concerns that we had when we saw this number and we saw $100 million for sustainable communities is, why is this so low? Because when you look at the program, transportation fuels come under the cap in 2015, and forecasts that, you know, we've looked at range in the, you know, somewhere between $2 to $5 billion should be generated in 2015. Now, this is a very complicated new world. I'll start there. It's really going to be difficult to forecast in any year what the revenues are going to be generated because, A, it's a market, it's an auction, and, B, the regulated entities have some flexibility about when they have to purchase their allowances. So let's say you have, you know, X number of emissions, you don't have to purchase all of those allowances this year. You have several years to do so. So again, it's going to be very difficult, and I think what the Department of Finance and ARB have done in this budget is they're kind of lowballing what is going to be generated this year because they don't want to affect the market. They don't want to affect, you know, what people will bid ultimately on these allowances. So it's just important to note that, you know, at the end of the day, there might be a lot more revenue available, but as far as what's proposed in this budget, you know, it's this $850 million. Amount. So getting into sort of our reaction to this, I think the program structure for the Sustainable Communities program is quite different than what we have been advocating for and what the Transportation Coalition for Livable Communities, of which we're a part, you know, with the Alliance for Jobs and League of Cities and others, that approach was really building on SB 375, building on the fact that, you know, we have the state mandate, and making the case that it makes the most sense to provide the MPOs that are delivering this program the flexibility to invest in, you know, the most critical sustainable projects to implement our long-range plans. What's proposed in the budget is a, again, sort of state-centric grant program administered by SGC where we would, you know, entities in the Bay Area would be eligible to apply, but there would be no guarantee by region and no role for MTC in selecting the projects. So page 3, we kind of highlight what we see as our strategy as far as recommended changes. The first would be to increase the share of funds going to the Sustainable Communities Program. You know, it's quite small. It's about 16% of the share going to transportation is proposed for sustainable communities. In our long-range plan, sort of our forecast, we had sort of made the case that 40% of transportation share should be going to sustainable communities. So that's one piece. Secondly, we'd like to see the regionally based approach that we've been advocating for, as has the Transportation Coalition for Livable Communities. We'd like to see the eligibility broadened as well. It is quite narrow. Going back to page 2, I just listed the bullets. They specify that transit and transit-oriented development that includes low-income housing would be eligible, active transportation, agricultural land preservation, and planning. So there's quite a lot of projects that, you know, we've envisioned funding, including, you know, low-carbon freight and ITS projects that reduce emissions that wouldn't be eligible in the way that they are conceiving of it at this moment. And then one other strategy is to seek a greater loan repayment from the cap and trade funds. You'll remember that in the current budget year, the legislature loaned $500 million in cap and trade funds to the general fund. This budget proposes to repay $100 million of that funding. You know, we would like to make the case that given the budget surplus, the general fund should be able to repay the full $500 million this year. And with that, the Sustainable Communities Program would obviously enjoy a larger share. So that kind of concludes the Sustainable Communities portion of the budget. And lastly, on Prop 1B, the very good news is they are recommending a full appropriation of the balance of the transit funding for Prop 1B. We have approximately $284 million in projects in our region that will benefit from that. And we'll be providing more detail on which projects you know, in the near future. And then finally, on the loan repayment that I mentioned at the outset, it's $351 million in transportation funds that were loaned to the general fund. They're proposing sort of a fix-it-first emphasis for this funding, which we certainly support, $137 million for maintenance and rehab of the state highways, $100 million to cities and counties for local street and road maintenance. And there's an attachment to the memo that lists each jurisdiction's share of that $100 million. Obviously, it's not a huge amount when you distribute it across the state. We get about $10 million of the total. So for each jurisdiction, again, it's not a huge amount, but every bit helps. $100 million for traffic management, mobility projects, $9 million for active transportation, and $5 million for environmental mitigation. So that concludes our summary, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Rebecca. Any questions? Yes, Tom?
Yeah, Rebecca, how does this, I know that we had our proposal for crop and trade, so how does that correspond to what we actually received from the governor?
Well, it's certainly a lot lower. You know, I'll start there. I mean, our proposal had forecast somewhere around $100 million coming to our region from the cap and trade program, and right now we're looking at $100 million statewide. So, you know, it's by orders of magnitude smaller. I think, you know, there's a number of strategies, some of which I've discussed, which is increasing the overall share. But yeah, it's definitely significantly lower.
It's also true that even though the governor has proposed this, it can be altered by the legislature and probably will be to a certain extent. The problem is the legislature can increase. If they decide to increase in a number, the governor, of course, has the power to eliminate that increase. But if it's decreased, the governor does not have the opportunity to raise it.
Well, what I would say about that, too, is that part of our strategy should be to focus on the share going to sustainable communities rather than a dollar amount. You know, and perhaps the way the budget could be structured is also to be kind of retroactive based on what's ultimately generated from the program. While they don't want to appropriate more than is generated, you know, they're lowballing it right now, and if we get a higher share, then at the end of the day, we can do much better.
I think that's actually the right strategy to do that, because we don't know.
Thank you, Rebecca. Yes, Amy?
Chair Liccardo. I just wanted to follow up with a couple of questions. Obviously, we have spent the last 3 years investing thousands of hours of time following SB 375. We have all of our cities engaged. You look at an earlier agenda item that talks about cities' compliance and engagement with the you know, housing and all the economic development issues relative to transportation and the quality of life and economic prosperity. You know, we heard from the governor's office last night at our Contra Costa Mayor's Conference about their interest in economic development, but I'm concerned, and I'm not sure how the administration of these dollars at the state level, rather than, you know, engaging them at the regional level, where we have set up sort of slightly different priorities from region to region, you know, Southern California, Northern California. So I guess in addition to the dollars, I wondered if we had any additional thoughts in terms of how the importance of administering these dollars at a more local level.
Well, Commissioner, I think you pretty much hit right on the head of what our legislative strategy is. I think that the Commission has been pretty good partners with the state, essentially a state mandate on the Senate Bill 375, and that we ought to have a role in implementing it. I think in this case, while this is all good news in the sense that they could have picked non-transportation items for cap and trade, they are focusing on transportation. I'm going to pick up a few points here in a minute, but I think that that is the most important adequacy point that you just brought up that we need to focus on in Sacramento this year, is that we need to establish early on a role for the Commission and, of course, for all of our partners to get into this process on supporting 375 with real money and not have a state-centric program across the board. I mean, I think for those of you who observe the state, I mean, this has DOF written, Department of Finance written all over it, and I think that we can make some headway with our legislators and with others on establishing early on a role for those who adopted the plan and those of you who went through that whole process to get some resources to help them implement it.
Commissioner Wiener?
Thank you. So just so I'm clear to Ann, in terms of what we adopted 3 weeks ago or whenever it was, in terms of our core capacity program and the operating program, and we made assumptions about cap and trade, how exactly does this jibe with that? Does that throw that sort of to the side, or?
Look, it's a little bit of both, Commissioner. I think in one case it does throw it to the side. I mean, what we would be faced, meaning we, the Bay Area, would be faced is our jury, so to say, would be a state agency for proposals that would come in. And that state agency would be under the guidance here, which is narrower than what you adopted. I think a second part here is this rail modernization piece that they have included is an item I wanted to draw your attention to, because it's very good news. You know, many years back, the state did have a statewide transit program that was used to build BART on the East Bay. It was built to build BART in San Mateo County. It was used by Muni. It was called the TCI program, the Transit Capital Improvement Program. This is essentially a reinstatement of that with a $50 million piece that could be used by Muni and by BART and others for this connectivity. As you recall, in the high-speed rail vote, there was a good chunk of money that was used for this. BART used it for building cars. Muni used it for the central subway. So it has been introduced. It's not what we expected, because we're hopeful that we would get a portion of cap and trade to come to us for the decisions on the Commission's policies. But it has emerged here, too. So there are a couple of avenues where we can achieve the goals that the Commission adopted.
And what are the odds of being able to get changes here to make it more regionally based? Because I know I'm preaching to the choir here that, you know, we came up with a certain balance of how we want the money to be spent between the different operators and the small and the large, and we need to all make sure that we're honoring that. And I could see it becoming a food fight in Sacramento if, you know, and so I think we need to honor the agreement we made, and I know you agree with that. So what are the odds that we're going to be able to do that?
Look, this is the governor's proposal, and I do think that we're going to have a fair chance at advocating our position to the legislators, who will eventually have to approve it. But I think, as you point out, this is going to be an important element of our engagement next year, one of probably our single highest priority, to get this thing in the form that your policy has directed us to. So as you point out, look, it's going to be a fight, but I think it's a fight worth having.
Thank you, Commissioner Wiener, and thank you, Randy. I had one question with regard to revenues that might exceed the $850 million. Is there anything explicitly in the governor's message that would indicate where that money would go?
No, there isn't at this point.
No, their proposal, again, is just to appropriate $850 million this year. So they're not recommending, you know, any further appropriation above that, even if the revenues are much higher.
It simply rolls over into the next year's budget. Okay,
well,
thank you.
Chair, well, what more than likely will happen is they may revise. If they're going to make an adjustment, they'll make it right then. And they will, you know, if they have a much better forecast, so they'll increase it or decrease it, depending on the may.
Okay. Well, thank you. And thank you, Rebecca. Unless there are other questions or comments, I have no items, no cards from members of the public. So we'll move on to item number four, state and federal advocacy. Randy?
Well, this is the place where we make the points Commissioner Wiener and yourself just brought up, is our advocacy and how we want to do it and what your interests are. In Sacramento, as this cap and trade introduces us into a bit of a bold new world, I think it is important that we get our oar in the water as often as we can. In the past, we've done a lot of different things to try to connect you with your own local legislators, either locally or in Sacramento, and our minds are open for any of your ideas about how to do that. We are proposing one formal meeting in Sacramento on Tuesday, February 25th. There is a Bay Area caucus that exists both on the Senate side and on the Assembly side, and we propose to have a lunch on that day so we can articulate this message to as many of them as we can get at one particular time. We will also almost certainly be contacting each of you for other meetings that take place and that come up with members across the Bay Area delegation. But this date and this time is something I wanted to put on your calendar and make a recommendation that we do so in Sacramento. As far as the key messages for that meeting and what we would focus on, we would propose that we do focus on trying to get this vote threshold lowered, which has been a longstanding commission policy. To work on this cap and trade issue, which is a big deal. We are trying to establish now a practice that will almost certainly be continued into the future. So the first year is really going to matter, as Commissioner Wiener pointed out. Housing remains a significant issue in Sacramento. Senator DeSaulnier has a bill out there to try to increase statewide funds for the affordable housing development. I think that bill's chances aren't that great, but I think it's something that we still need to focus on. With respect to the budget surplus, I think all in all, we have a pretty good proposal by the governor to repay some loans. We think we could probably do more. There's a lot more loans than this that have been made out of transportation funds, but this is a pretty good start. And then the last thing, which has to do with our toll program, is to establish a temporary license plate program so that when vehicles come off a lot, either a new car or a used car lot, there's actually a tag on the license plate holder that identifies the vehicle so we can stop losing so many toll revenues. Our friends on the police side also like this as well, because having cars without tags is a problem for them as well. So at that point, this would be what we would propose to focus on next year, and at minimum, try to get the legislator and yourselves together on this particular day in Sacramento.
Commissioner Hagerty?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I wanted to just, this date, you said it was February 25th?
Yes.
You know, that's pretty much wipes out most of the supervisors. And
it does. Okay.
And probably some council members and mayors due to the fact that it's the day of our meetings, our board meetings. So I don't know what kind of participation you're going
to
get.
Well, it looks like I need to fix that then first.
Pardon me?
It looks like I need to fix that first.
Okay. So.
Any other questions? Okay. Randy, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's right. I wanted to pause there about Sacramento before we go to Washington, D.C. In Washington, D.C., we've done a meeting consistent with the APTA Legislative Conference for something on 30 years. As you know, as many of you participated, it has a plus and a minus. The plus is that everyone's there, and we've also hosted a reception that has a pretty substantial turnout, both from the administration side and from members. So the good news is everyone's there, and we can get together, and you can talk to your colleagues, not just around the Bay Area, but around the state of California, because our partners in Southern California have been with us for about the last decade or so. They kind of witnessed our success and wanted to be a part of it. They wish to continue that, both across the L.A. Basin and San Diego and in Sacramento. The downside of going during the APTA time, as you know, is that it's incredibly busy, and getting meetings with members is hard, and just the whole atmosphere there is really tight. So you kind of have to take the good with the bad, and we've generally made a decision to stay with that. Now, there are many other trips we take to Washington, D.C., not at this period of time, but our main effort has been to continue this, and we recommend that we do so. There's a schedule here in your item about when that is, but it's essentially that second week in March, starting with March 9th. As you know, members are not there on Mondays. They're not there on Fridays. They generally show up at some point on Tuesdays. So most of our meetings are on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We would have to move one of our committee meetings for the commission, your regular Wednesday meeting, we would move to the week prior. So that would be our recommendation as far as D.C. is concerned.
Thank you, Randy. Any questions? Commissioner Hagerty.
Randy, I guess back in the old days, I seem to remember where we kind of got everybody in a room. And by everybody, it was AC Transit, it was BART, it was maybe any mayors that had shown up for it or whatever. And we kind of ran through our legislative proposals, and then we sent everybody out in teams together and kind of spoke as one voice. My concern is we've moved away from that. And I do know that, you know, there was a lot of grumbling or whatever behind the scenes. I would personally like to see we move back to something like that, because what's happening is, and I see it more with the transit agencies, they kind of get out and they start speaking with their own voice. And in the meantime, we're trying to speak with one voice, and it becomes very confusing to the members of Congress. I do know that some of these people felt, you know, MTC, not going to tell them what to say. But I've been in meetings where coming in behind somebody else, that we try to speak with the MTC mantra, and only to find out that somebody had been in there earlier and they're saying something totally different. How do we address this? How do we get back to maybe where we are speaking with one voice? And the reason I keep saying one voice is San Joaquin County has a very robust program in which they all go back and they actually do speak with one voice. And for a community as small as San Joaquin County, they do quite well. And it's because they're not dysfunctional. They do work together. And, you know, it seems to work for them. So is there any thought of maybe trying to get back to that? And I don't even know how the other commissioners feel about it, but to me, I felt like it was pretty productive.
Well, Commissioner Hagerty, I think you put the hammer right on the nail here. You know, San Joaquin actually copied us. I remember that conversation. They called me and said, how do you do this? And I said, well, you do it this way. And they've had a great deal of success. As you pointed out, we once put everyone together. We met with, you know, members of the committees, and, you know, we had quite an event for a number of years. I think one thing is that Congress has changed, and, you know, the committees have essentially no say anymore. And so our ability to influence members from around the nation has diminished as a result. I think they are still interested in hearing from us in the Bay Area, in part because of the leadership in the House with Nancy Pelosi is so significant that they want to hear what we're telling her. I think with respect to getting folks together, well, we've tried to create a hybrid of what we used to do. Part of that hybrid is to have a series of open meetings with the big committee staffs, both on the Senate and on the House side, where all of the transportation partners are included. When it comes to meetings with members, we do try to include folks from, let's say, AC Transit, which comes to meetings with us with, let's say, Barbara Lee, or when we meet with Mike Honda, we seek to make sure that our friends in Santa Clara County are there. So we are trying to kind of bridge this gap that you've identified. But I think that gap is going to be there. I think we are going to be consistent on a number of things, such as high-speed rail, such as new starts. But I think it has been a challenge over the many years to try to get the whole Bay Area on the same message when it comes to seeking federal funds, and that has just been the reality that we've tried to face and tried to, let's say, manage as opposed to try to solve.
So
So there's no thought of trying to go back to the way we did maybe 5-6 years ago?
I think at this point I'd recommend that we can do more as far as to make sure and to work harder with our partners to get them to come to the meetings that we schedule with you. We would certainly do that. We have done that in the past. We haven't been insistent, but I can give you...
I think there was a value to have maybe having this overall transportation briefing that we used to have.
On Sunday
nights? That's really what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And getting, I mean, it's valuable in the fact, like you said, APT is there, so there's a lot of people there from the Bay Area, and I think it would be helpful to have a breakfast in which we host a transportation briefing for everybody, you know, that's back there at the time, what I mean by the Bay Area delegation, and at least try to get them to, you know, stay on track, I guess.
Look, I hear you, and again, we should do that on Sunday night. We'd be happy to work something on Monday morning and get as many folks there as we could.
Thank you. Commissioner Sparrington.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I really appreciate Commissioner Haggerty bringing this up. It's not only that meeting, it's the literature that we hand out. Years ago, when we went to Washington, D.C., we'd have AC Transit, we'd have Muni, we would have BART, we'd have VTA, and what their requests were, and it was a consensus of the commission. We all supported that. When they went in, they talked from that piece. And what Scott is saying is exactly what's happening. Everybody's going in with different messages. And one thing that we've learned over the years, when you talk about it being dysfunctional, we almost encourage that by going in with these conflicting messages, because it's a lot easier for them to say no when you have this agency ask for one thing, this one asks. And so it just puts them in a convenient spot. But if everybody is making the same request, it makes it a little more difficult for them to ignore it. And so I just think that it's really important that we do the work ahead of time before we go there, try and get all the big agencies, try and get everybody together, build this consensus, put it in one document that we can hand out and we can all speak from. And I think it's good for our legislators to hear somebody from Solano County talking about how important it is for Muni or VTA, what role they play in a region. I think that's huge. I really do. And we've kind of gotten away from that. And so I agree with Scott. I think we have to go back to that and you know, almost force our partners into doing it. And it's going to serve them, too. I think it'll serve them in a positive way.
Commissioner Giacopini?
Thank you. I just want to say I completely agree with Scott and with Jim. So I'll just say that since they've already said it. I thought that there was a unique opportunity when we were doing those trips to have meetings between just among ourselves, meaning the Bay Area delegation, to when necessary, resolve problems, and when not necessary, develop strong enough relationships so that when problems needed to be resolved, they could be.
Chair Haggerty, if I could just make one comment, because I think it's pretty relevant to this discussion. I think one of the things that really changed over the last few years is that Congress banned earmarks, right? And in many respects, what brought everybody together was MTC endorsed and included in our reports to Congress all of the requested earmarks from the bus and bus facilities program, from the clean fuels program, from the elderly and disabled program. There were all these separate programs. Now we have one program that's an earmark program, and you know, many would argue it's not even an earmark program. It's the New Starts program. And you know, we developed our consensus projects in that, and it's really two projects, right? It's Central Subway and BART to San Jose. So I think it's really important to put that context on this, that the individual operators don't have as much at stake in, you know, trying to get into our document, because there is no place for them per se. I think it's really would be great for us to be reaching out to them and bringing them into the fold as far as what our policy message is. But before it was policy message and project request. Now it's pretty much just policy message. So I just wanted to kind of put that context on it.
Thank you, Rebecca. Commissioner McKenzie.
Very briefly, I have observed this in other program areas. water quality and water supply activities in Sonoma and Mendocino County and the value of going in both with the cities and the water agencies together with an agreed-upon program and series of requests to our legislative representatives. So I'd endorse the previous conversation.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Commissioner, Madam Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick question in a slightly different tack. One of the things that we've also been successful in terms of partnerships is working with the private sector. So last month, you know, Will Compton came and talked about Transportation California's initiatives, and we heard in the news yesterday that former Secretary LaHood has joined Building America's Future, and I think we have our local government, local elected officials so tuned into transportation that I got several calls yesterday from my colleagues in Contra Costa saying, Amy, is this a good sign? Does this mean that we're going to be able to get some more additional federal funds into the kind of programs that are important to the Bay Area? So I just wondered if that is anything that also an opportunity for our engagement in Washington this spring?
The answer is yes. I mean, we've for a long time included, for example, the Bay Area Council, Silicon Valley Leadership Group, others as well. And they do the same with us. They take a separate trip. They need a transportation expert with them. They often ask Steve or me to go. I think it's important that we include the commissioners on those meetings. So they may come with us in March. They certainly do it on their own. And so the easy answer to your question is yes, and we are focused on making sure that continues.
Commissioner Hagerty?
Yeah. I'd just like to say, as chairman of this committee, although I seem to be yielding the meeting to Sam Licaro, and I appreciate him starting on time, but some of you should have been in the two-hour commute I was in this morning. You know, I'd just like to say, I think what you're hearing here, whether or not there's earmarks or whatever, I think Congress is still finding a way to sneak money out the back door, and I don't think we should feel like there's no money, you know, coming out of there. But what I hear here anyways, is that there is a strong desire to step up the program, make it more robust, be more inclusive, and speak as one voice when we go back there. And I would like to, you know, spend some time working with you, Randy, and maybe some other commissioners, and maybe Rebecca, and trying to figure out how we can make this a little bit more robust, inclusive program than what we have kind of fallen into in the last few years, and try to get back to being the transportation leader in the United States, as MTC has been recognized in the past. And I just think that, you know, 5-6 years ago, the program that we had, it was more of a, you know, MTC's here, this is what we've got, and this is what we need, thank you. And now it's kind of like, well, we're kind of here, guys, how you doing? I want to get back to the old days where our chest was sticking out, and we went to Congress and we had, you know, a bigger group with us. It was coordinated, and, you know, there was a mixture of, it wasn't all commissioners in the meeting, it was a mixture and a bit more robust. And I think you would agree, Randy, with me that in the last few years we've kind of gone from a very strong position, and I won't use the word whimper because I don't think we've totally given up, but we're certainly on a decline of power, and I think we want to increase the power. I think that's what you're hearing from the commissioners here, that we want to go back to the old days. Whatever it is, we want to push harder. And maybe they're kind of derelict in their duties right now, but we want to push them to be better when it comes to transportation in the Bay Area.
We agree with you, Commissioner, wholeheartedly.
Randy, I just had one question based on something you said earlier relating to the power shifts in Congress, that power in the committees has waned. Where has it gone to?
Well, it's basically a leadership, you know, dominated house. I'll give you a particular example. You know, one of the all-time great moves in Congress was when the past chairman, Schuster, his son is now the chairman of the Transportation Committee, used the entire committee, which had like 70-some-odd members, to override the leadership, the Republican leadership, Newt Gingrich, on a big move. And so he used earmarks and others. He had 70-some-odd votes. He combined it with the Democrats, and they prevailed. Well, that wasn't forgotten. And when Bonner became Speaker, he cut the committee down to some really small number and packed it with freshman Tea Party people. So the T&I committee, just as an example, to give you a sense of kind of that punishment of that act is being, you know, placed upon the current members. And so it used to be that we could have a great deal of influence by influencing the committee chair and the subcommittee chairs of that T&I committee to really focus on transportation. Well, it's not just transportation. Everything is focused with the leadership now, particularly on the House side. And, of course, the Bay Area's members are all Democrats, and the House is run by Republicans. So our ability to affect real change is very limited. On the Senate side, it's a little bit the same, not quite as harsh and as extensive. But, look, I don't want to use up all your time, but that's just an example.
That's helpful. Thank you. Okay. Unless there are other questions or comments, I see no comments from members of the public. We'll move on then to number five, federal legislation. Rebecca?
Good morning, Commissioners. Carolyn Clevenger with the Planning Department here to talk about our federal freight policy principles. When you adopted your federal program, federal advocacy program, freight was included in it, and we're back to the committee today to just give you a little more detail and talk about some of the work that's been underway. The freight program has been part of our legislative program for a number of years, as well as that of most of our partners in the region. There was a lot of progress made under MAP 21, where the feds actually called for a lot of planning and policy work to be done at the federal level related to freight. However, at sort of the last minute, they did cut the funding program that had been included in that bill. So one of our major principles, as well as that of all of our partners, is to get that funding piece put back in for the next federal reauthorization. We are very actively involved with our partners in the region in the planning work that's underway, being led by DOT as well as Caltrans. We're working with the CMAs, the Port of Oakland, as well as some of the other ports who are organizing primarily through the California Association of Port Authorities, as well as Caltrans, both headquarters and locally, in order to make sure that we have a consistent message going back to the state on the freight work in the region. We're also working with about 15 to 20 other major metropolitan planning organizations across the country on some consensus federal policy principles that we'll be forwarding to USDOT, hopefully, within the next few months. And the material in front of you goes into a little bit greater detail about the major policy points we'd like to advocate for in the next federal authorization. This is really sort of a starting point. We are working with our partners, as well as our partners in Sacramento and San Joaquin Valley, primarily working with San Joaquin COG, but also the other COGs throughout the valley on a coordinated Northern California advocacy piece to try and really talk about some of those interregional connections that are so important to freight in our region. The major points that are outlined in Attachment A for the freight program are that we believe it should be a multimodal national freight network. With MAP 21, the feds really focused on the highway network, and they have charged USDOT with identifying the primary highway network, and everyone's telling them, and actually DOT staff is saying as well, it needs to be multimodal. It's not just highways. We need to include these major gateways. DOT is very aware of this, so we are trying to sort of all have a consistent message back to Congress that they need to expand that to be a truly multimodal network. We are advocating for a national freight infrastructure grant program, an actual funding program to go along with the planning work. And we're advocating this be a dedicated freight funding program based on new revenues generated so that it's not just pulling money from other programs in the federal program. We have identified in our advocacy principles that those funds should be eligible for both infrastructure as well as mitigation projects. And that it should be split into a competitive as well as a formula program. We're advocating for the bulk of that money to be put in a competitive program to really reward those areas that are very disproportionately impacted by freight. If you look across the country, all states do have some goods movement impact, which is why we include some type of formula program, but we also believe that, you know, very key regions are much more heavily impacted by freight than most of the rest of the country. So we're trying to look at sort of a hybrid program there For the competitive program, we are advocating that it rewards local match. One of the things that our state and region have done really well in is generating local funds to help fund improvements. We also have a lot of private sector partners within our region that, you know, we hope that providing some incentive to generate revenues from the private side as well as our port operators could help really make our projects more competitive on the federal side. And we do have, you know, some examples of that when the Trade Corridor Improvement Fund program that we participated in actively had a 50% match, and we were throughout the state able to leverage state money with a lot of local, regional, and private sector funds to deliver projects well over the magnitude of the amount of money available in that program. We outline a number of different potential revenue sources. These are, you know, all things that have been in discussion over the course of many years by different policy committees at this committee and in various recommendations made by special commissions to Congress. Our main goal in putting these out there is to just get the conversation going in greater detail with Congress about we need some revenues. There's many options. Let's look at a mix of options, primarily focused on user fees, looking at public-private partnership opportunities, potential fees at land, sea, and rail ports of entry. You know, one of the issues with container fee style fees are, can those be used outside of port property? And many of the constraints on our freight network are outside of port property. So to make sure that any types of fees have the ability to be used on the major bottlenecks feeding those facilities, and also try to, some of these concepts will need to be, you know, much more developed in terms of how you actually administer them and how you collect the funds. But there have been many, many discussions about the, you know, indexing other fees to inflation, doing some type of weight distance tax that's based on a lot of other programs in some states that have already started weight distance taxes. And so we'd like to be able to work with our partners as well as Congress to start trying to identify which of these options might have some legs and develop them further. Today we're asking for your approval for these advocacy principles, and then we'll continue to develop them as we put together the advocacy material for the reports to Congress.
Thank you, Ms. Clevenger. Mr. Chair?
Thank you. The thing that's kind of troubling me in this, and I guess I could see areas where we could apply, is the, and specifically Port of Prince Rupert, there's tremendous leakage now from the California ports north of the border, and I don't really see anything addressing this, and yet they're getting use of our infrastructure. They've got a rail line. There's a lot of things that they've got to hurt the ports that we have here in the United States, and we don't have anything really to address that in this advocacy program. And I really think it's important that containers moving outside of the United States that have not paid into the infrastructure that we have paid use taxpayers' dollars to establish, that they should pay significantly a fee as they cross the border. And I don't see us trying to really address that. Unless I missed it. I mean, I know there's a few where you could say, well, you know, they could pay the carriage fee. There's some other things. I guess they could pay the mileage base for trucks,
right,
things like that. I guess I want to see something more specific that says if you cross the United States border from a port outside of the United States, that you're going to pay heavily a fee to use our infrastructure so we can reinvest back into making sure our roads are paved and everything that we need. And we haven't really got, we didn't get there. And I think we've really, it's a big strike.
Yeah, I think two of the revenue sources that try to get at that issue in particular are the carriage fee, which would tax based on the cost of transporting that good once it enters the country. That's one of the things that we like about that is it does capture everything once it enters the country.
I said that. I said there's a couple where I think you could maybe Randy's all here, I'll take it. I wanted to say it. I wanted to say if you're dragging a container in from from Canada or Mexico, that you're going to have an international fee that is going to be placed on this. I mean, our truckers pay, you know, somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000 a year, easily, moving goods and services, and they pay nothing. So I want something more specifically said in relationship to international traffic.
We got it. We will do so.
But did I win? That's the question. I know you got it. But
I think there's two things. We need to do some research because we're in this world of free trade, and what can we do and not upset something else? But we take your point. I think the issue for container fees is that writ large. I mean, folks in L.A. who think that container ought to all go to L.A. needs because the container originated there, forgetting that, you know, a grade crossing in a neighboring state just shut down the roadway for, you know, a 100-car train. They don't get anything. So I think this notion that this container affects people throughout its entire chain is not just relevant to this point about crossing international borders, but is relevant everywhere. But I take your point about we can't have free riders who happen to import in a competitive port up in Canada or in Mexico be able to use the infrastructure that they affect for nothing.
The problem is they're affecting American jobs.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
And
yeah.
And they're affecting American livelihood, and that's exactly what the Port of Prince Rupert is. I'm not even looking south to Mexico. The Port of Prince Rupert is coming directly at West Coast
ports.
Ports. Mm-hmm. Thank you for helping me find that very technical word. You know, they're directly going after American jobs, and we have to figure out, and in the meantime, you know, we have ports that are paying for fees that help make the communities more green and all this other stuff, and they're driving their polluting trucks to our communities. So free trade, that's one thing, but it's not really free trade. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but specifically, Randy, the containers that are moving from the ports in the United States through the United States are paying a significant amount of fees to move over those roads. And yet, I don't believe the people coming out of the Port of Prince Rupert are doing the same.
Randy, I assume you don't need a motion on that.
Nope, we're good.
Okay, great.
This will come to the full commission, and what we'll do is we'll have a strikeout item so you can see the changes that we made in it.
Okay. Commissioner Kwan?
I'm not officially on the committee, but I wanted to hear this part, and I'll try to drag this by the Joint City Port Committee. The only thing I'd warn you about, Scott, is that Oakland was one of the first ports to export more than we import. So if it's good for us, then it would be good for the countries that we're exporting to. And I've been warned more than once by the feds to stay away from tariffs, et cetera. What I'm more interested in is that there's a difference between Northern and Southern California on the different kinds of fees that the ports charge, and that, and particularly in Southern California, they've been looking at air quality, and they have fees that we don't have. And so I got to mediate trucker strikes over fees and the change in the air quality standards. What I'd like to just see is a little bit more standardization throughout the state so that we don't disadvantage the Port of Oakland, since it's the major port. I'd like to understand a little bit more what the governor is putting into high-speed rail, because for those of us on the east side of the bay and for the valley and North Bay, we'd like to see some improvements on the current capital lines, and particularly for the transportation at the Port of Oakland for agriculture. So if everything goes to high-speed rail, how does that affect it? Could some of the money, since it's not going to be spent, it looks like any time soon that we're putting this money aside, could some of that be shifted to more immediate and practical uses? As you know, the Port of Oakland has just undertaken a massive, first probably major intermodal improvement in the Port of Oakland in decades, and it will make it faster, more efficient, and create, we hope, about 5,000 new jobs. So I'd like to see any kind of funding continue to work that, because they've got about half of the modernization funded, but there's still about a gap of $700 million. So that's what I'm interested in, is to get the other half so the whole port is modernized and continues to be real competitive in this next decade, because Oakland and L.A. Long Beach are the two ports that have deep enough berths in the state that we can take the bigger ships that are coming through the Panama Canal. And so making sure that Oakland stays competitive, making sure we in the Bay Area can get that rail, truck, freeway, intermodal funding that will be so critical, that will take a lot of cars off the road, a lot of trucks hopefully off the road, improve congestion, and improve our air quality all at the same time. To me, that's any kind of intermodal funding, as in this principle, is my priority.
Commissioner Sperring.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Scott's point about this level playing field, and I really think that that point should be emphasized. But Randy, do we try and match up our advocacy principles with what the direction Congress is going? You know, when I talk to some of the Republicans in the Congress, you talk about taxes and stuff. I mean, they start rolling their eyes. But if you start talking about public-private partnership, they perk up. I mean, there's certain things that they're interested in, and I would like to make sure that we try and package this to where we compete well and maybe get some interest. And so I don't know if we go through that exercise, but I think it would be worthwhile to at least look at that.
Look, that is a big challenge. I mean, I don't know how we turn a gas tax from what it is. It's a fee. It's a user fee. And I think when it comes to freight, we're really talking about user fees. And I think we're not able to make that distinction with our Republican friends. We do have a free trade policy in this country, but we don't have a supportive free trade transportation policy to support it. And I think what we're trying to do is to make that connection, that if we're going to have free trade in this country, then we need a transportation policy to help make that happen. And that's the challenge that I think you're giving us, to make sure that we're clear about that.
Madam Chair?
Thank you, sir. You know, I think to Commissioner Sperring's point, in looking at the history of the Alameda Corridor, that was definitely a public-private partnership where the freight industry got a sense of getting – they could clearly see the value for the private investment. So I think that is a good model to pursue. I know that there's a federal freight committee similar to the committee that Steve served on with the Surface Transportation Committee several years ago. Is that, how does that timing of that work fit with what we're trying to do, and is that also an area where we want to try to be engaged in the policy recommendations that are going to come out of that committee, knowing, of course, we have a great stake locally in those national policies?
Yeah, the committee she's referencing is the National Freight Advisory Committee, and Randy Iwasaki, who's the chair of Contra Costa TA, is on that, as well as four other reps from the state of California. There has been a lot of effort made within the state to coordinate with those five reps primarily through our statewide planning work. That committee meets somewhat frequently, and they are broken into subcommittees for specific issue areas. So we are responding to requests from some of the chairs about information. They have been mandated to not talk about revenue, and their committee is pushing back on DOT quite heavily about that mandate right now. So we are, making sure that they see what our principles are, working with the other major MPOs across the country. The principles, the big picture principles, are very, very similar. So the NFAC members are hearing that from people throughout the country. And I think, they are asking a lot of MPOs. SCAG has been heavily involved with it, as has Sandag and ourselves, in terms of giving the NFAC members information when they need it. They haven't gotten to specific policy discussions yet. They've been, so far, sort of meeting sporadically, and they don't have a clear mandate about what their deliverable should be yet. So I think we're still seeing how that committee coalesces.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Chair, may I just follow up with one other question relating to Commissioner Kwan's comments about the Oakland port? This is one of the few ports in the nation that's an export port. It's critically important to California's economy. And so I guess my question is there any place in this advocacy platform to provide additional incentives, additional funds for this whole, the ports that are exporting goods, that we're not just pass through of, TVs to Kansas, but we are actually taking American products and exporting them in a very significant way. Is that something, too, that we could include in kind of our overt advocacy efforts?
You know, we didn't distinguish that in here, but we can work on some changes to that when it gets to the full commission, because that is something that's very unique about the Port of Oakland.
Great point. All right. Thank you. Unless there are other comments or questions, we'll move on then to 5B. We don't need a motion there, do we? Or do we need a motion? We need a motion.
Yeah, we do need a motion.
Okay, we'll entertain a motion.
To the commission, I think,
move, Mr. Chairman, with the additional discussion that we had, that we could modify the...
Thank you.
Okay, motion is second. I see no members of the public rising to speak. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you. We're on to 5B, H.R. 3636,
briefly,
a bill which may never make it its way out of the House of Representatives.
We're so optimistic so soon, I see. This next item is also an item we're asking for you to take an action on and forward to the Commission for support. In this case, it's a bill in the House, 3636, by Blumenauer, to increase the federal gas tax by 15 cents in a series of steps and to put a COLA on it. You know, this is the traditional way in which the federal government has funded its programs. As you know, the Federal Highway Trust Fund and the Transit Trust Fund are way below in their annual generations how much funding is being approved by Congress, and we're in this hole. And so this is a way to try to have a self-funded user fee-based system that we've somehow figured out how to call a tax. The good news is Ray LaHood is able to speak his mind now, that he is no longer the Secretary of Transportation and was on television, for those who watch the PBS NewsHour, asking for a 10-cent increase. So the list of supporters for this bill is essentially the transportation and community, including the Chamber of Commerce and the truckers. So I think as far as a coalition of supporters, we have them. Whether or not we can get it through this Congress, I think we can assure we won't do it prior to the primaries. This is an election year. I think particularly on the Republican side, the sage observers are saying nothing will get done until the primaries are over. But I do think we should not give up. The last thing, I know we're getting late here, is that in the past couple of years, we have proposed, the Commission has proposed to Congress, that we shift from a gas tax, excise tax, to a sales tax on a revenue-neutral basis on year one as a way to kind of break the deadlock in this debate. The idea is that a COLA would exist because the prices will float. They will likely float up, although gas prices, as you know, move around a lot. But this is more of a straight-up proposal to increase the gas tax. So we do have this mixed message out there. We do. It exists. But I think we should sign on board for this proposal and lend our support to trying to get our user fee-based system on a better footing.
Thank you, Randy. Is there a motion? We'll entertain a motion at this time. It is moved and seconded. Any members of the public like to speak? All in favor? Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you. And 5C.
5C is there as a report for you. I'm not going to cover anything in it
okay.
in detail unless you have any questions.
Are there any questions? There are not. It is now time for a public forum. Is that correct?
There.
Okay. Oh, we do have, yes, Jerry Grace. Jerry, come on up.
You ain't got the tits?
Yes, we are.
Oh, that's quick. I never see that coming. there is going to pass on me. Two things. I need to ask you this question. I don't know if the staff knows it or not. I want to know, did Jay Brown say anything about his report, what he was cut and not cut? Because they came up with yesterday, talking about some stuff, what he wanted to do with his money. That part I don't know. That's why I never see or ever heard anything about what was Jerry Brown trying to do in Sacramento. That's the number one. And second, it's Happy New Year ever for everybody. And I hope we have a new year. On the other hand, one last thing. In San Francisco, I don't know if Scott knows it or not, but New Year of Praise is coming up in February the 8th. New Year of Praise coming up on down there in the city. But I don't know any other city have anything, an event going on in their city, their town. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Happy New Year to you as well. I understand. Is there another member of the public like to speak? Okay. Sure, after you speak, if you could submit a card, please.
Okay, sure.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes.
All right. My name is Tim Bukowski. I'm a former council member, and I'm going to be recording these meetings, and they are available on a YouTube channel, onebayarea.us. I've actually acquired that domain for a web page as well, but we haven't set that up yet. But onebayarea.us is where you'll find the recording of this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your efforts to reach out to the public. Okay, with that, this meeting is adjourned.